Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, many people will still be trying to make up their mind about who is our best presidential candidate, and perhaps looking to the past might be a help. Professor Kevin Rafter from DCU is also co-editor of the Irish Presidency, Power, Ceremony and Politics, and he's put together a list of the top 9 heads of state, because, of course, we've only had 9 so far. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Hi, Sean.
What kind of criteria did you use?
Well, I suppose as a voter, I'm not dissimilar to many of your listeners in terms of what do I want in a president. And the poll data tells us that, you know, it's honesty and integrity. It's the a candidate who and a president who will represent the country, represent us as a people, and their experience and their qualifications. Like it's an office without significant political power. It really has limited political power. So it's a ceremonial office. So the representation role is usually important. And I think a lot of us, when we go to the ballot box, that's one of the things that's to the fore. Mm. Will this person represent us well?
Because it strikes me that out of the 9, the expectation level of the first 6, if you like, was much lower than the next 3.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. It's fair to say, look, the first 6, all men, elderly, distinguished political careers or public life careers. But the office was distant from the people. It wasn't the way it was when Mary Robinson came in 1990 and she reinvigorated the office and gave it a degree of energy, changed the perception of the office in 1990. Before that, 6 men, 6 elderly politicians. And in a sense, they stuck to the very narrow confines of the Constitution in terms of what the president can and can't do. And they were distant, I suppose, to a large extent from the people.
Yeah, and I forget which one it was, but one of them said, basically, my job is just to sign things.
Sean T. O'Kelly said his job in 2-term president, Sean T. O'Kelly, former Taoiseach, came into the office and in 1950 said his job was to sign on the dotted line. And like, it wasn't that he did nothing as president or people like Douglas Hyde or Eamon de Valera. Like Sean T. O'Kelly, he went on foreign trips. He addressed joint houses of the Congress in the United States. So there was a role that he fulfilled as president. But in terms of energy, in terms of setting, I suppose, a tone for where Ireland was at a particular point in time, the presidency and the office wasn't seen in that regard.
Yeah.
It was really a sleepy place. And then it all changed in 1990 when Mary Robinson came in.
Now, the sleepy place thing, now obviously Mary Robinson was kind of revolutionary in that regard, but the way presidents had been regarded by governments kind of seem to encourage that sleepiness, if you like. Now, Carol O'Dolly, sadly, is remembered for the Thundering Disgrace saga, not of his making at all. But the attitude of the government of the day towards him was just shut up, it seems.
Yeah, like it was a Fine Gael Labour government. Liam Cosgrave was Taoiseach. Erskine Childers had been elected in 73. Liam Cosgrave is a Fine Gael Taoiseach. You know, the relationship with Childers was distant in itself. Childers died in office. He didn't serve for that long. Carol O'Dolly then became president unopposed. He was a joint nominee of the government and opposition, but he was a Fianna Fáil background, and the Fine Gael Taoiseach that was Liam Cosgrave, he wasn't enthusiastic about O'Dolly right from the start, and their relationship was tetchy. One of the constitutional requirements is that the Taoiseach is supposed to keep the president generally informed about matters of domestic and foreign policy. So what that meant in previous presidencies was when Eamon de Valera was Taoiseach, he went up to see the president every Friday, or each month, on the last Friday, I think it was, of the month. And they obviously had a cup of tea and a chat. We have no records of these meetings. They're private conversations. When Liam Cosgrave was Taoiseach and O'Dolly came in, those meetings were infrequent. And even before we get to the the debacle that became when the Minister for Defence described, or the Minister for Justice described, Carola Dalig as a thundering disgrace. The relationship between the Taoiseach and the President was strained in any event. And it happens. So we will know, I'd say, in about 30 years when the archives from the Michael D. Higgins presidency are released, to what degree within government the officials and politicians were exercised by his public commentary. Because he's spoken out more than many of his predecessors. Now, he's been clever in how he's done it. But some of those comments, particularly on foreign policy or in relation to the government's economic policy, I'm sure have caused some disquiet internally. But we've seen no public angst. But I bet you some of it's in the papers, and we'll see it later on. We know when we go back into the 1970s with Liam Cosgrave and Carola Dalig, it wasn't a great relationship. And when he sent a piece of legislation to the Supreme Court to test its constitutionality, and the government wasn't pleased about that, he was described as a thundering disgrace. The Taoiseach, I think today there would be a huge furore and expectation that the minister would be sacked. The Taoiseach stood by his man. And the president ultimately, after a distance and a standoff, decided to protect the office and the I suppose his own self-respect. Yeah. He resigned.
Yeah. Now, you did. We will get to Mary Robinson because obviously she had such an energetic effect on the presidency. But you've put Douglas Hyde in the number two slot. Explain why.
Well, Hyde was an agreed candidate of all the parties to become our first president in 1938. He took office without an election. He'd had a long career, distinguished career, an advocate for cultural nationalism, the Irish language. And he didn't have a high profile presidency, but what he did was establish the office. And he established the office in terms of that it was a non-political office. When the presidency, we didn't have a president before the 1937 constitution. And when the office was being proposed, there were fears, and not unexpected because of the context of what was happening in Europe at the time, that this was maybe a possibility of a power grab by De Valera, and he would use the presidency to assume authority and power across government. So there were concerns about what this new office was. What Hyde did was he established it as a non-political office. And in that sense, notwithstanding the criticisms of the early presidents that they didn't push the office enough, I think the very fact that Hyde went in there and gave it a degree of esteem and that non-political status is hugely important for those that came afterwards.
Yeah.
He was the patron of the GAA. And at that time, the GAA had its rule that GAA members couldn't attend foreign games, and soccer was a foreign game. And he was invited to an Irish soccer match in Dalymount Park between Ireland and Poland, and he accepted the invitation. Douglas Hyde accepted the invitation, and the GAA said, "No, you can't. You're our patron. It's a foreign game." And in fairness to Douglas Hyde, he didn't bow to the pressure. He said his job as president was to be a representative of all the people, not just one organisation or one sectional group. And I think, again, that set set an attitude for what's to come later with the presidency.
Yeah. Now, with Mary Robinson, was it timing to a degree in that she came along as a candidate at just the right time when the country needed a Mary Robinson?
Yeah, but there was no guarantee she was going to be elected.
That was a brutal, contentious
election in 1990. And remember, Brian Lenehan, who was her main competitor, Brian Lenehan of Fianna Fáil, he got 44% of the vote in the first count. So she wasn't a shoo-in, but she did win the election. By winning it on her own, in itself, she was a mold breaker.
Yeah.
You know, she's the first woman, the first politician to win an election who wasn't from the Fianna Fáil family. So that in itself was enough, if she did nothing else. But it's how she used the office. And I suppose she used the symbolic power of the office. She recognised, she supported, she validated a new changing Ireland that was emerging. Like, think about it in 1990. Like, divorce wasn't possible. Contraception was still limited in terms of access. Homosexual acts between consenting adults was a crime. So Ireland changed dramatically in the 1990s in terms of those moral, social debates. And in many ways, Mary Robinson represented that new pluralist Ireland. In where she went and who she invited to the Arras. Mm. And she opened up the Arras. Like, people sneered at the idea of the candle in the window for the diaspora. But again, 30, 40,000 people left the country every year in the 1980s.
Yeah.
They were largely forgotten about in terms of their home country. And the president here was actually saying, actually, no, we know you're part of the Irish, the wider Irish family. So she used that soft power in a very effective way over the 7 years of her presidency. And that was continued on then by Mary McAleese and by Michael D. Higgins.
Mm. Is there, though, a kind of an art to this, either by through the use of symbolism or explicit statements, that you have to be judicious? You don't want to be slagging off the government every day.
Ah, yeah. And I think that's why, even in terms of when the public are asked, you know, the qualities, the characteristics they want in a president, like, one of the top three they identify is experience and qualifications. Mm. Political antenna, I think, yeah, is hugely important. And if we look at the, and I think maybe that's part of why people are a little bit disappointed with the range of candidates that ultimately came forward or got onto the ballot paper this time, because they're marking them against Robinson, McAleese and Higgins, and saying, look, the presidency has been taken in a different direction, and presidents have defined this office and represented the country through this office. And we'd like to continue that. So to do that, you do need somebody who has political experience. You need somebody who has been around the block. And if you look at Mary Robinson, was a long-standing senator, constitutional lawyer. Mary McAleese had been an RTÉ broadcaster. She'd run for election, but hadn't, for the Dáil, but hadn't been elected. She had a substantial academic career in Northern Ireland at Queen's University. And we know Michael D. Higgins, senator, TD, minister. So they've all had a public role, vast experience, and they were able to bring that into the office. And in a sense, and I think we've seen that with Michael D. Higgins, the manner in which, even with these public statements, he's always nearly gone to the line and pulled back and gone to the line and pulled back. It's only once or twice he's gone over the line and caused a real controversy, or, you know, and some of his comments undoubtedly uncomfortable for government ministers to listen to. But I think he's been clever in his use of language or where he's said things. And I think Robinson and McAleese were similarly the same.
Yeah, there was always an element that, you know what I'm thinking, kind of the way they express themselves. Also, those three presidents, do you think they contributed to the international profile of the presidency of Ireland? Because, you know, sometimes presidents were inaugurated in Ireland and no one cared, you know, really outside the country, I mean.
Yeah, presidents have always gone on foreign trips, state visits and so forth. But I suppose for Robinson, in the first instance, you know, one of the first rows she had was when Charlie Haughey was Taoiseach and the Dalai Lama was visiting Ireland. And the government said, no, you shouldn't meet the Dalai Lama. She wanted to, and ultimately the government backed down. You know, we saw the visits to Somalia, Rwanda, and I suppose she showed Ireland's role in it. International affairs in a humanitarian way. In a different space, and this started under Robinson, but, you know, I suppose accelerated under Mary McAleese, the North-South relationship and reconciliation. Like, Mary McAleese went north over 100 times during her presidency, and not just to nationalist communities, you know. So it in a sense, the presidency then was being used as part of the peace process, but not in a direct political way.
Yeah.
So we see it in international visits. We see it in North-South. That said, like, there have been criticisms of, you know, the president also been involved in trade visits. And Mary McAleese was criticised when she went to China, which was largely a governmental trade visit, and that, you know, she didn't speak out enough about human rights during the visit. Mm. So there's a fine line that a president has to walk.
Yeah, we shall see who gets to walk it. Kevin Rafter is a professor of political communication at DCU and co-editor of the Irish Presidency, Power, Ceremony and Politics. Kevin, thank you very much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.